the foundation of what I want to present today is just to talk about web marketing trends and try to bring to light some of the trends that are significant to you and that do bring business value to you. Now, as any businessman knows, certain things that I'm going to bring up are going to translate differently to different business sectors and are going to be more important because your customers, your services are diverse. And so certain things are going to relate to you maybe better than your neighbor or vice versa. But the foundation of everything I'm going to say today really is our first point. And I'm going to do my best to click through here. Is that traditional marketing as we know it and has been translated into a lot of new web marketing channels, and that people's time and attention is being switched from just the old school print, television, etc. that we're familiar with, to they're spending their time and they're spending their money on using a lot of web-based channels. And the as a result of that, that's impacting our businesses as you all know it. Now, when I walked in here today, one of the first things I saw everybody do was pull out their mobile devices, get connected to the Wi-Fi here, and you know, checking emails, sending texts back and forth. So all of us are very familiar of the significance and the growing significance of this, which we refer to as a mobile device. And so the foundation of most of what you need to be aware of is that this device is rapidly changing how you do business, how you connect with your customers, where your customers are, where they're looking for information, where they're researching menus, where they're researching dining options, where they're researching where to purchase a car, how to purchase a car, the pricing for a car, where they're doing a lot of, they're spending a lot of their time, and these web channels are ultimately funneling down to this mobile device. And so we need to be aware of the trends on the web that are impacting your business and how they are translating through this mobile device to your business. And so there are over 75 billion people in the world, 75% of the world presently has mobile device access to the internet. 75%. And in developed countries, that number can even be higher. And that translates into almost 5 billion mobile users worldwide. And what that says to you as a business owner is if your customers and your people are spending their time and money online, certainly this is a real significant place where you need to line item and budget investment dollars to make your services and your products more accessible to those customers, so that that can translate into business value for you. And so one of the largest web trends that we're seeing today is that we are in the middle of a mobile revolution. And as a business owner, you need to be aware of that. One of the next items that we have is what we call gamification. Now, this is a fun word that marketers, we always like to come up with cool new words that make us look important. And gamification is one of these cool new words, and I did not make it up. It is a word that's common. And essentially, it's taking a lot of traditional processes and making them a lot more fun. You see it in the car sales world. You'll go online, you'll register, you'll be able to pull the lever on a video game and get certain type of discounts or certain types of things that are through a web-based tool that ultimately hopefully translate into them getting more people to take test drives in cars and ultimately sell cars. It's this gamification. It's taking these things, case in point is rewards programs, and making them fun, making them interactive, using the interactive element of the web in a way that's fun and gamified, if you will, so that people will have access to sales and products and services and select you as their choice versus a competitor. And this is a really big trend. You're going to see a lot of this coming out this year. A site that we can reference is called bigdoor.com. Another one is called punchtab.com. And they're essentially rewards-oriented programs that make it a lot more fun to do business with various companies. Next item that we're seeing is inbound marketing. Now, some of you are more familiar with the web, and have your websites more enhanced than others. But there is something called content marketing. Now, we all know search engines and how Google ranks you and how Google indexes the information on your website is of critical importance, because that's how people find the information. They Google stuff, or they use Bing, or they use Yahoo. Now, inbound marketing is essentially just a fancy term to say people voluntarily want to come to your website because there's content there that they need and want to access. You didn't spend money, ad space, or anything else to draw them to your site. Essentially, you're providing information that is of value to them, that they come on their own. And content marketing and inbound marketing is becoming increasingly important to search engines and how they rank your site and how they serve up and index the information to browsers and to searchers, meaning that they have what they call algorithms. They have kind of a point reward type process where these bots will analyze the content on your site, and they'll decide whether you are of a valuable nature or an invaluable nature, so that when somebody searches for Christian schools or whatnot, it'll determine where your information becomes on the first page, on the 30th page, or on the fifth page, etc. But inbound marketing is increasingly important because it says to our businesses, we need to make sure that the information on our site isn't just a brochure, or isn't just a cheap graphic and a logo and a blurb. It really needs to have some significance. And that significance needs to provide value to our customers and really tell about our services. So copywriting becomes extremely important. Finding somebody who really knows how to describe the benefits of your products and services well becomes something that you need to invest in. And hiring good people who understand web structure and web development and content marketing becomes really important, especially if you're aware that your customers and your demographic and the people who use your business are more engaged online than others. And we'll talk a little bit about who those people are in a little bit. So inbound marketing is a big deal, or content marketing is another term that we use. Next on our trends list is video. Video rules. I don't know, did we get internet access at all?
I think so, yeah. We got over there in that department over there.
If it's possible to, just pull up a site called Easy Roof Estimates. I don't know if this guy's in front here. Okay, so it's either one or the other?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I'll block off the other one if you want.
If we can do it, pull it up. If you can't, it's no big deal. But video becomes is a
roofs
huge
or roof.
Easy. It's the letter E, the letter Z. Roof. ROOF. Okay. Estimates.com. There's more than four billion online videos are watched every day. Video is a really great way to market your products and services because Google owns YouTube, and people love watching videos versus having to read massive amounts of text. And here's a site. It's for some reason it's pulling up the mobile version of the site, which is good. I'll make a point just how when your site is mobile optimized, stay up here so we can see this menu. Instead of having the traditional block of menus across the top, this site is coded to recognize if somebody is accessing it through a mobile device, and it takes all your menus and breaks them down into one big drop down so that you can use it on a touch screen, or if you're on a small phone, obviously you don't have the width on your screen, so it compresses everything into one column. If you could scroll down for me, this is a client of mine called Easy Roof Estimates. Keep going, I'm going to show a video that we have. You see everything's compressed into one column. Here's the video there. If you click on play, and again, it's a good example.
When you're trying to provide a roof estimate, do you ever dream of flying? If you've ever wished you had a set of wings to help you out in the field, you'll want to check out what they're doing at Easy Roof Estimates. The Easy Roof Estimates team from provides roof estimates for insurance adjusters and contractors using satellite imagery and advanced software technology without ever leaving the office. And that's it. That's all they do. They're kind of like the superheroes of roof estimates. They provide the estimates so you can get back to doing what you do best faster. It just takes a minute to request an estimate. Just provide them with a few pieces of information, and voila, most estimates are turned around in just 48 hours. Superhuman, you decide.
So here's an example of using video to market this business. It's a pretty complicated business process of satellite imagery and this and that. It can be pretty boring when you're talking it from an engineering standpoint. But we tried to use that gamification approach, making it fun, happy, easygoing, and then using video to actually make it entertaining to learn about something that's a boring process. Unless you're a geek, then you think that's really cool and imagery and all this and that. But apart from being a geek like me, which I would generally find it interesting, again, we're just using something really simple, like a video, to make it interesting to a new prospect to come into the site and learn about the business. Yeah, Glenn?
To get a custom video like that, about what would one have to budget? How much that one costs specifically?
Oh, no, that's fine.
About what would you have to budget?
This is a startup company, and they use my network of vendors that I recommended to them, which keeps my costs down because I can predict what I'm getting myself into. The more custom you make something, obviously, the more expensive, like a custom home. This one was about $3,500. That's the scripting, that's the voiceover, that's using an animation, a set that I've used in the past that works good. They liked it. The whole graphic type thing, and that's all the After Effects work and so forth. So that's concept to finish. You're in the 25 to 35, but it really bumped up into the $3,500 window to do something like that. Now that'll be indexed by Google as well. So when someone's doing roof estimates through Google, that ranks really well. I believe we, through our search engine optimization program for them, I believe my latest check, we're number two, page one, number two for roofing estimates for them, which is huge for a startup to be able to get that type of traction that fast.
Is that on a national basis or on a local basis?
That's national, yeah.
You explained it. They just do satellite to take the roof and do the estimates?
Oh, sure, yeah. Their business concept, just as the video showed, instead of having to send teams out to measure out a roof in the traditional way of going on-site, it's all off-site work that's done through imagery, satellite technology. It measures it, and the technology's there for them to do all the precise measurements and to calculate all that and provide estimates to a contractor or an insurance adjuster. They save, obviously, enormous amounts of time, as well as on-the-ground resources that they don't have to deploy to make it happen. And so it's a huge savings for them. It's a predictable process for them as well to be able to. If there's a hurricane, they can go in and do 15 houses and make those orders all in a row and get it done instead of sending a crew down to Miami or
that's
wherever.
That's assuming the roof is still there.
Yeah, that's true.
And how did they figure out the slope?
Pardon me?
How did they figure out the slope of the roof?
I'm not sure about that one. That's beyond my...
I was thinking the same thing. They must get certain angles, and by extrapolating two different angle views, you can probably figure it out.
My question is on the plywood. How do you know the plywood needs to be replaced from the team unless you walk on them?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure of those items. I know as part of the ordering process, because I was part of the... I was overseeing the project. They have to, when they make the request, there's a whole couple of pages of specs that they have to list out. I'm not sure about the details of that.
But probably make some basic assumptions. That's probably okay. It's probably easier not to do
that. They may optionally with wood, without wood.
Every roof estimate includes a price per 4x8 plywood sheet. When they discover like three bad ones, they have in their estimate that each one of those is probably it's really easy to cover.
A couple other applications of using video, as I have a large hotel chain that we shoot videos for, that is for their in-house staff, to how to fold towels, how to provide certain services. So employee orientation is a real big use for them. They can update them, deploy it nationally, regionally, however they want to, using these video-based training tools. Some other items, we talked in our otherwise council group, we have a lady who owns a large real estate company, and she talked about recruiting as being a major part of her struggles business-wise is finding more and more qualified real estate agents. And so somebody had brought up, there's Tom, I think you may have brought up, yeah, using video as a way to offer what the packages and benefits are for her and her real estate company versus other real estate companies in the area as a recruiting tool. So she can make that sales pitch and reference people to the video versus having to always get in front of them face to face. As well as video plays well on mobile devices. And people like to watch them on mobile devices, and they're spending time and energy there. So there's lots of applications for video, and it's a massive trend. It's not going away. It's building momentum. So if you can figure out ways to use it, it's an excellent, excellent investment that can bring business value to your company. Cloud-based tools is another trend that's very significant. We have sites like MailChimp that if you do any type of a web-based emailing campaigns, I think Constant Contact is probably a little more well-known, but it's more of a consumer level. MailChimp's what I call military grade. It's for more serious business type email campaigns. But MailChimp, if you're doing SEO campaign management, even if you hire a firm like mine to do SEO for you.
What's SEO stand for?
I'm sorry, search engine optimization. Essentially, it's just getting your site to rank well on search engines so people find you instead of your competitors. And so SEOmoz is a .com is a great tool for you just to see what's going on with your own campaigns. And if you're investing $500 to $1,000 a month and up on search engine optimization, it's always good to be able to not take my word for it, but to have your own resources and tools that you can check and keep everybody accountable. And then when we do have our review meetings and so forth, you've got all your own resources to compare notes and have a good conversation about what's going on. But cloud-based tools, I use a bookkeeping tool for my business that's all cloud-based. I can access, and I think QuickBooks and all these have migrated a lot in that direction, but you can access a lot of your finances online for anywhere, invoices and so forth, and it's been a tremendous tool for me. But trying to use tools that are in the cloud can be a huge benefit. This brings up another trend that is not listed here but needs to be mentioned. Probably one of the largest trends that you need to be aware of in addition to our mobile revolution is the fraud revolution. That as much as we're interconnected, it does create the problem of security and ultimately the problem of fraud. And as we use more web-based tools, as people are more interconnected, and as we have access to our finances and business processes, we need to be aware of our security protocols to prevent fraud. Nothing can be worse. I just had my account, fraudulent activity on my business bank account, and this was just last week, and it's been a real pain in my backside, to say the least, to try to correct and go through all of these different things to fix some of these problems. And the only way we've discovered that it happened is it had to be somebody internally at the bank or at one of the retail locations that had access to my information. There was no penetration from the web internally, but they still were able to use my information to go on a shopping spree at Walmart and some other things. So, yes, Glenn.
I have what I call my Rosetta Stone, and it's a piece of paper that has all 38 of my codes for my security codes for, I got different ones for all kinds of things, and I lost it, so it's killing me, and I'm redoing all those.
Right.
Any trick to, because we want security, you don't want to have the same code on everything that you have, but you can just have three or four codes and mix them up. But any suggestion whatever on how to manage your security codes?
Sure. There's actually software applications, I think like Password Keeper and so forth, that actually will encrypt an area where you can keep your passwords. And there's software tools out there as well where you can put a password and it will give you random passwords that randomly change all of the time. But I would look for, I'd Google some software solutions that are password keepers, password protection, password services. And there's lots of good options out there. I know if you're looking at a more advanced level, I know the, I have a good friend of mine who's a pretty high-level attorney in Washington, and their firm requires them to keep a security key that every time that they access a device, they have to put it in the USB drive. It randomly generates a password. It recognizes that it's an approved device, and it will give them a password to access the client information and so forth. And so it's real high-level security. Obviously, they spend a lot of money on making sure that these keys are operating within their firm and so forth. So beyond just some good, clever, practical, you know, making sure, I use, like, here's some real common sense stuff. I use special characters in place of certain letters. Instead of the letter I, you can use an exclamation mark. Instead of the letter A, you can use the at symbol. There's lots of little things that you can do to take your traditional passwords and spice them up and still make them something that you can remember, which can be the greatest challenge, right? Because not all of us are going to spend all that money on a massive security key program and so forth. But using special symbols is critically important, because password crackers, I mean, they can run a billion different algorithms and have every interpolation of every alphabetical and numerical sequence possible in, you know, like 5 minutes. So if all you have is letters and numbers, they can crack your password really fast. If they want to. So special characters and things are a nice practical way for just average people to spice up your password and make it a lot more challenging to crack. And then the length of your password becomes a really good option as well, to spice it up. So the shorter your password, the easier it is to crack. Special characters add more complexity, and then the length of your password makes it a lot more challenging for people to crack as well. So there's some real common sense practical things that you can do there. But fraud is something that's a big deal. And, you know, China, as any business guy knows, they have complete buildings full of people doing stuff. That's just crazy. I mean, just even on the government front, we have military security issues all the time with the Chinese. And then the Eastern European countries spend a lot of money on IT, and obviously the mafia and things like that are really large over there and unregulated, uncontrolled in any way. So they have teams of people just going into our banks and trying to figure out how to steal your information. And they're smart. They'll get in and they'll just wait for a year and not do anything. And then when the timing's right, they'll pop up and maybe not take $100, but they'll take $1 out of a million different accounts that you don't, and so you don't notice if you don't manage your accounts real close. Some of those types of things. So beware of fraud.
$1 from a million different accounts.
They're smart criminals. Okay, the last item on this screen is that we all know the cost of acquiring new customers is a lot higher than the cost of retaining and keeping your customers happy and keep servicing the customers you have. So loyalty marketing is becoming a massive trend, and it gets easier and easier to do because your customers are spending time online and they're spending their money online already. So provide tools, provide resources for them on a loyalty basis to get signed up in a loyalty program where they can get rewards, they can earn points, they can earn money, credits, special access to deals and sales, whatnot, through the web, and use loyalty marketing, again, that they can easily access through a mobile device and have fun interacting with your business. If it's a restaurant, you know, if you come here, take a chance, you could sign up for these, like I said, these little online games where they can press a button and the wheel spins and all this and that, and they can win maybe a free meal on Tuesdays if they win, you know, this particular game of chance or whatnot. The loyalty marketing becomes a big deal. I had mentioned to the last group, Blue Cross Blue Shield hired me on contract for a while to work in their innovations department. And essentially it was just coming up with new business models where Blue Cross Blue Shield could make money with different businesses, because they're really scared of Obama and the whole healthcare shift and so forth. So we're just a think tank of coming up with new business ideas, developing a model, marketing it and branding it internally, and then pitching it to the executives. And part of our largest pitch, which was about a $15, $20 million pitch, was a whole reward program that people who had health insurance could access the website, set up an account, and follow this web-based program where they could earn ranks and earn rewards by measuring their weight, watching their blood sugar, exercising, and managing it all through this site. And as they managed their healthy living, they would actually earn points that they could spend at retailers and so forth. So it was a loyalty, rewards program, gamification, it was all these things, but it helped healthier people spend less money on health insurance, which means greater profits for the health insurance company, of course. So that's one example of a large Fortune 100 using some of these techniques that we're talking about here. Any questions? I know we're plowing through a lot of information, but...
Did Blue Cross Blue Shield implement that?
That one was brought in. It has not been implemented yet. And my contract expired, and the guy who is over the whole innovations department, they ship people around, he got shifted somewhere else. And I know that particular program is kind of in a holding pattern, and they probably will deploy, but they have not as of yet.
The reward for the, you said Blue Cross Blue Shield reward program didn't go?
Well, that particular business model, they liked it, and it got accepted, but they haven't deployed it yet. And I'm not, the guy who was overseeing everything with that program got shifted somewhere else, so I'm not sure.
How long ago was this?
Probably about 4 months ago. So keep your eyes open for that, because if it does come down the pipes, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. Any other questions before we move on? Okay. A few more items. Social media. We obviously know in Facebook and Twitter. Facebook has over 1 billion users. Twitter has over 500 million. You have LinkedIn, which is social media specifically geared toward business professionals. As a business professional, if you do not have a LinkedIn account, you need to have a LinkedIn account. And basically, it's an online profile of you professionally. And I do tons of business networking through LinkedIn, as well as it's a really professional way for me to give a business card to somebody and say, hey, if you want to learn more about where I'm coming from, check me out on LinkedIn and then give me a message. And basically, they go there. It'll tell you what things I've done, who I've worked for, and you can learn a lot about Calvin Bryant real quick. And the nice thing about LinkedIn is because you can't just stick information on there, people have to, certain skills, people that you know can endorse your different skill sets. So it's a real great way of verifying who you're talking to if you don't really know them. And it's a really invaluable social media tool as a business professional. I really recommend you be a part of it and get your information on there. It's great for business. And oddly enough, from sales, LinkedIn, I've just messaged certain people randomly because we have a common thread or some sort. I've met somebody they know. And people will respond to a LinkedIn message, and they will never respond to an email. And the reason why is because I can check out who this person is that just sent me a message, and I can see that they know Glenn and they know Tom, and say, okay. So they're kind of, it's verified, and there's a sense of accountability there. And I get people responding to me all the time on LinkedIn, whereas I wouldn't even respond to random emails because you never really know who you're talking to, et cetera, et cetera. So that's...
We endorse LinkedIn.
Right. And I actually have an endorsement for you, Glenn, that I have on my to-do task list for that. But... social media is not going away. It's just getting smarter. People now are a lot more open to sharing information about themselves, about interconnecting, whereas before that wasn't a reality. But especially as the younger generations who are growing up already using it, they're very, very used to sharing and are open to sharing their information. And depending on what business sector you're involved in, that can be an invaluable tool for you. And Facebook is a little bit, depending on your business, Facebook is a little more social. LinkedIn is definitely very professional level. Twitter can be really valuable. For instance, I am on retainer with a large church out of South Carolina, and we use Twitter to announce events. That's our main thing. It's so people don't have to come to the website. We announce all the church events through Twitter, and the church, they get it on their mobile device, and they can see real quick what's going on. So it's that's a simple, common sense, but a powerful tool for them to. Because when we do broadcast emails, we get about a 3% open rate on the broadcast email. But through Twitter, we get a much larger readership of those information when it's pushed out. And then obviously for storms or any type of change in a calendar event that you're getting really close to executing, it's a nice way to push out information real quick if there's been a change of venue or cancellation, et cetera, et cetera. So Twitter becomes a real invaluable tool that you can use as well. Here's an evolution in social media where it's been a little bit of a reversal. E-commerce is pulling away from using Facebook. Before, say, Target would have a Facebook retail e-commerce presence, and then they have their website. And there's been a trend where they tried it, and it was too complicated and confused the consumer. Now there's a trend to pull away from Facebook to do those types of things, focus strictly on their website, and just link out of Facebook to an e-commerce site that is still a web-based resource. And so there's a lot of changing and shifting in that side, but get used to social media and getting social media getting smarter. Find out what tools on the social media front bring business value to you, and plan to invest in them, because that's where your customers are, and find out what the trends and how they're spending their time and money on them, and it will bring business value back to you. Now, for all you bean counters out there, our next item is measuring and optimizing, and it's essentially having the ability to track and manage and measure the investment dollars for your web-based marketing investment. The tools to do that are getting so much better. They're so much more intuitive. They're easy to use. They can track. So you as a bean counter, say I'm spending $100,000 this year on various web-based marketing channels. I want to know what my ROI on those are, and search engine optimization. What type of click-throughs am I getting? What type of sales am I getting from translating those browsers and those click-throughs to actual customers and sales? There's tons of great what we call analytics or measurement tools that measure those criteria, measure those metrics, and that where you can manage your online resources and your investment much more closely and with a lot more precision as well. And there's several resources out there to do that. Google itself has tons of free resources, analytic resources that you can use. And there's tons of research, probably good 15 or 20 of them out there that you can take a look at. And the list would be a little bit too big for me to mention right now. Local marketing meets the mainstream. We have, as search engines get smarter and as more people are using mobile devices to access the web, the ability to do local, regional type marketing that is web-based is becoming much more available to you. And so it's not always this massive net. Now you can focus your resources on regional marketing that's web-based and try to capture your local market and appeal and have your products and services positioned to appeal to a local market. And that is becoming more and more of a reality. You can get a lot more bang for your investment dollar by knowing your regions of profitability and where you're going to get the greatest reward and ROI, and not overspend in areas that aren't going to bring any type of return for you. And so that reality is a significant trend as well, and I would keep your eye on that. Another major development that you should know as a business owner and as a marketer of your business is the Hispanic market. The Hispanic market is the fastest growing segment of the U.S. population, and they represent approximately 25% of new births. And they are, research is showing that Hispanics are spending more time online than non-Hispanics and being more active online than non-Hispanics. So if you've been ignoring that potential market base and new market that's emerging, you need to take a second look online with your web-based marketing of seeing how your products and services can appeal to the Hispanic market and take advantage of that rising trend. Yes, Mike.
Is there any research on the higher socioeconomic end of the Hispanic market, whether or not, you know, like, would they do most of their searches in English or in Spanish? You know, you tend to think that the Hispanics who
sure.
have the better education and everything else would tend to get into the normal economy more so. I'm just curious if there's any thought on that.
I don't know the official research response to that, but great question, because in our otherwise council meeting, we have a Hispanic gentleman there who is has a lot of web-based marketing experience, and he made a great comment. He said when Hispanics go online to search for information, they don't expect your site to be completely in Spanish. He says, but having information that has some type of Spanish reference or some type of Spanish appeal and hook shows that you're not giving a nod of respect to the people of Spanish heritage, and that you're open-armed to their business, and that you want them to understand where you're coming from and the products and services and so forth that you're offering. And he says that is the best approach from his perspective. And I think all of us thought that was a great comment to make. And because how do you do it? How do you do it respectfully? How do you do it in a way that you don't have to build a whole other site that's written in a second language? And so that was some good input. Glenn, I think touches on your comment there. Okay, as we're coming in for a landing, marketing goes visual, what we call infographics. One more time, translating a lot of your content on your site and making it visually appealing versus only something that people have to read about. We have a concrete company that I'm in the middle of building a site for in South Carolina, and we are building lots of just graphic diagrams showing their processes, showing their different mixtures of different cements and different processes they have. And we still have it written out in the copy because we want Google to index that written verbiage. But obviously, to somebody who's browsing mobile device, somebody who's on just coming in through a desktop PC, we want them to easily grasp the concept of the services and products that they're offering that are superior than their competitors. And so we're trying to do that more visually using graphics. And that is a trend that is getting responses and increasing sales, because you're making it easier for people to access information that they feel is of value, and then ultimately they're going to spend money and invest money in using your service as a result. So think of that when you're retooling your site or refreshing your site, is how you can make a lot more of your content visually appealing. And again, we use that industry term as infographics. And last but not least, because I build a lot of websites and refresh a lot of sites and work with a lot of companies of how to better position themselves online, great website design works because great website design sells. And as more people are online, competition for people's attention becomes greater. So more important that you have a great web channel, i.e. a great website that communicates clearly and effectively, so that people choose to stay on your site to get their information versus going to a competitor. And your competitors are doing it, whether you like it or not. So in order for us, especially as Christian businessmen, we have tools, and we need to be the sharpest guys. We need to be the guys that are on it, because we're using our influence, we're using our resources for the kingdom of God. And these are great channels and great tools that can really let us grow profitable, healthy businesses that we can control and use these resources for God's kingdom. and to invest in missions and to invest in our local churches and to invest in our communities to exert our influence for good instead of evil. And we all know a lot of wealthy business guys who aren't necessarily the most ethical or moral people. And so hopefully some of these trends that I mentioned here today, you find some business value out of them. I'm open for questions anytime. I have business cards and so forth too if there's any need for that. And coming in for a landing.
How do you work with churches? I mean, you actually run their Twitter program, but you run their response program, you answer questions for pastors, or what? Are there people who do that kind of thing, or what?
Yes. Great question. I work with a lot of mega churches that are ginormous, like a church that's kind of coming up here, I'm sure a lot of you know, or like Celebration Church. I've been working with them since Stovall had 11 people when he first came to town. And so with somebody like them, it might be different than, because they have bigger budgets than a smaller, like Assemblies of God church, which traditionally are in the 300 to 800 person range. But we have programs where we're managed, like the church in South Carolina that I've already referenced. They're the largest Assemblies of God church in South Carolina. They're probably about 1,500 people. And we manage their social media for them. So we put posts from their pastor and so forth on their social media. I work with their staff as a consultant to use their internal resources and volunteers. I train their media guys on what type of video I need, what type of video to shoot, and so forth, so that my company gets the graphic and information that we need in order to put it on the site to use these tools. So we'll go in and we'll work with the resources that they have as a consultant, or if they need us to do it, we can go down there and take care of a lot of those things themselves. Now, like some of the huge churches, Joel Osteen and John Hagee, I don't know if some of you guys are familiar with him, Rod Parsley out of Columbus, Ohio. I've worked with all those guys for years, and they're so big. We focus on different areas. They do a lot of big conferences, so I was involved a lot in the marketing of pushing these massive conferences that they would promote, and we'd come in and do all the brochures, all the marketing for it, the magazine ads, all their web-based social media pushes, and everything for their big conferences. And I don't think it's too difficult to imagine all the applications of some of the things I've mentioned when it comes to marketing a large event. And so for some of the larger mega churches, that would be applicable. Some of the smaller churches, we would work with a lot of internal resources that they'd have, volunteers, etc., because they are on tighter budgets and they have resources to use.
Good.
Yes, sir.
What's your opinion on web.com and, I mean, your honest feeling towards what they provide and how they do it?
I think... You use web.com or 1&1?
No, I use 1&1.
1&1. I've had mixed reviews because, I kind of have a biased opinion because a lot of the interaction I have with them is from disgruntled people who've tried to do something and then they come to us to fix it. Mm-hmm. But I obviously have a skewed opinion because that's the only side I see. I've never used them personally. But I think budget website prospects are great if you're just getting your feet wet and you need to get in there just to know what the options are without spending a lot of money. And so I think those resources are good out of the gate, but I think that as you get deeper, you're going to realize that you need customization, and at that point in time, you may have to take it up a level. These EasyRoof guys that I showed you, they're former web.com customers. They spent a year trying to develop their site and finally just pulled the plug on it. And they had actually one of their salespeople in web.com reference me to them. I guess they were friends or something, which is a little odd, but either way.
Out of like my $800 PPC campaign that I spent with them a month, out of that $800, how much is actually getting spent on Google and PPC, and how much of it do you think is actually going to web.com?
I don't know the answer to that question.
Like,
I couldn't give you an honest answer that I could be confident in. I don't know. But...
like, in your case, how would you, I mean, do you have, like, a 15% that you take for your, you know...
Great question.
Seven or?
And PPC stands for pay-per-click. You can go on Google and you can set up a campaign where you actually will only pay for people who click on your ad, and you can set a budget, say $500 a week or $50 a week, or, and then once your money and your budgets run out, they take your ad off and it's gone. So pay-per-click or PPC, how I charge for that is I just charge a flat fee to set it up, and then a flat monthly fee to manage it. Because I've never known a fair way to do it any other way, because it's pay-per-click. Right. And so how I measured it was, what's my time to set up a good campaign for you, and then charge for that time, thus the upfront fee. And then if you want me to look at it and give you feedback on how it's doing, then I just measure how much time per month it takes to do that and charge you a flat fee for it. And that's where...
Is that based on how much I would be spending, or do you have just a flat fee across?
Well, it depends on how many ads you're running.
Right.
And because the more metrics that we have to spend time measuring and looking at and absorbing, it's a time thing on my side with that. So that way you get all of your money, you know exactly what's going towards your pay-per-click, and you know exactly where I'm making my money and how I'm getting paid. And so hopefully you stick around a lot longer. There's no question marks.
Because with WebDoc, I'm a customer of theirs right now, but I've been happy with my phone calls increasing, but the two things that I haven't been happy with are my organic search has not been raised at all. My original website is like the third on for Jacksonville papers right now.
Okay.
But my web.com, organically it doesn't even rank. And they're always like, no, we're doing SEO, and I don't really think they are. But then that's the other thing, is they tell me that my site goes down at about 3 or 4 o'clock every day because I run out of, money on my PPC. But I'm like, how much of my $800 is actually going towards clicks, and how much is going towards you, because you could be splitting it. I have no idea. They don't tell you.
Yeah, and that's where that measurement and optimization comes in. There's lots of tools where you can either hire somebody to do it for you, or you can look at it yourself. But if it's not ranking well, then they're not doing good SEO. And here's the problem with SEO. It's Google search engine optimization. Forgive me, and always feel free. I keep on talking French, I know. And every industry has their buzzwords, and I use them so much I forget sometimes. Forgive me. But Google changes the rules all the time. They just had an update called Penguin, where I talked about content marketing, where they're switching. It used to be very what we call backlinks, where your ranking depended a lot on how many people linked to your site and how many sites you linked out. Because they said, well, if someone's linking to your site, you must be important. You must have a valuable site because there's other people linking to your site. So what people did is they went out and hired services in India that would give you 500,000 backlinks to all these fake sites, because labor's so cheap. They just have people over there making all these fake websites. And so they could game the system. So Google, in an effort to try to always provide better search results, says, okay, we're going to get smarter with our technology. We're actually going to read the content of your site now. We're going to see the sentence structure, how it's done. I mean, they get really specific, and so they're starting to rank with this new Penguin update using content marketing and measuring it a lot. And so backlinks they're still important, but they're lower on the list. And then social media, what we call social bookmarking, becomes a big deal. When we do SEO, we have a whole social bookmarking campaign that we do for you, and that's just a lot of buzzwords to say. We use social media to make posts about your website and link back to your site through social media. And Google likes that because you have to be a registered user to use social media, so they realize that you're a real person with a real email address. So it's more likely you're not a fake person gaming the system. And so I would definitely take a look at it.
Could I use the SEO Moz to actually, and then figure out how much Google...
Yep.
They pay Google per click, and then
I don't know on the pay-per-click. I don't think on the pay-per-click SEO Moz would work.
Is there a way?
But what you can do is, I can talk to you more about it later, but you can just set up your own Google Analytics account.
Uh-huh.
It's free. And you can just find out, get the username and password that they're using, and you can pull up all that information through Google. Yeah. It's all free. And it's this analytics and measurement. Google gives free tools that you can use. To measure your campaigns, especially pay-per-click. But make sure you measure it. That's a great question, because they're interested in making money.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
And they're spending a lot of marketing convincing you to come over there. They got to pay for that, so that's all coming out of your pocket in one end or the other. Any other questions?
Do you do anything with text-based marketing, where you're texting, text broadcasting?
I haven't. But I know that it's a real valuable tool, and in the right applications, it definitely works because people read it. You know, and the most basic form, marketing is about connecting with people in a meaningful way, not just about connecting. I mean, you can wear a diaper outside with a sign over your head that says, I'm an idiot. People are going to look at you, but it's not a meaningful connection, right? So we want to connect with them in a meaningful way. And certainly text is a great way to do it, because you're assuming that someone's giving you their number, that you have access to that information in a genuine way. I can't see how it couldn't be a real good tool.
Okay, good.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate your time.